replicate buildable lands inventories and do a better job of monitoring what's happening with your land supply. Also being able to do certain types of analysis that might be helpful in the context of economic development and other issues. So the chart is directly from our work program. I won't belabor those steps. We'll get into the process in a little more detail right now. So the track one elements are the project oversight and coordination. David is the lead staff person that's going to be working with us on this, but Linda's going to be there, and Greg and Bill Bryle, basically everybody in the development services, is going to help us coordinate this thing. There's a number of steps for public input and review. This committee is a foundational component of that public input and review, but we also have, right now, the city is running an online survey to get citizen input on what they think the city should be doing with respect to community development. So it's covering housing, employment, number of issues related to this. And as of today, I think we had 143 responses to the survey. It's not a scientific survey, so it's not something we'll be able to say is necessarily representative, but I think it will identify the range of values and issues in the community and be a useful tool for discussion by this committee. And then we also have a couple of public workshops that we'll be facilitating. The first one is scheduled in May, and we'll be seeking citizen input on community development issues, on some of the things that we'll talk about this evening. We're also trying to coordinate some youth workshops with the local high schools. At this point, it looks like those may get delayed till fall, just because of logistics and difficult to find a contact person in the schools to help us organize those. There's a community development vision component of this, and we'll be working both through this committee, through those public processes, as well as some work sessions with council and planning commission to tease out what the community values and what you would like this community to look like in the next 20 years. There's the commercial and industrial land inventory. Okay, so a component of the statewide requirements is that the city inventory lands that are available for employment. And on its face, that sounds pretty simple. Put into practice, it's really pretty complicated. And so we've had a number of internal meetings with our staff and with David's staff in Public Works to talk about how we're going to go about inventorying that land. And by the time we meet with you again, we'll have some preliminary maps for you to look at so you get a sense of what's out there and give us feedback on whether we're getting it right or not. There will be what's called an economic opportunities analysis. This is required by statewide planning goals. Essentially, the idea here is to evaluate the community's economic development potential, going through a process of looking at historical trends, looking at comparative advantages of your community. How does your community compare to other regions of the state, to other communities in this region, et cetera, and then to develop a set of estimates of what kinds of sites are going to be required for the community to meet its economic development needs over a 20-year period. Related to that is the economic development strategy. I think these things are pretty closely interwoven. You can't really figure out what it is you need without having a strategy. That strategy needs to articulate what the community values. And there's some things that are beginning to emerge out of the survey results that I think will be interesting to work with. Particularly on the issue of redevelopment. And so that'll be a component that will come up in a fair amount of detail in these discussions in the future. And then there's a set of policy options for land use deficiencies. Those policy options can include, are required to include by the state, measures to more efficiently use existing lands within your urban growth boundary. So first you have to look at what you can do within the UGB. And if you can't meet all your land needs within the UGB, then you begin to look at expansion areas, and there's a priority scheme that the state has set up for what lands you need to consider first, second, on down the line for addressing those. And then there's a UGB alternatives analysis. Our preliminary work on the housing needs assessment suggests that the city can probably justify a UGB expansion. Without any measures, I think our initial analysis was somewhere on the order of 1,000 acres, but that didn't include evaluation of efficiency measures, things that the city could do to improve existing land uses. if the number's that big, it seems unlikely, maybe not impossible, but unlikely to us that the city will be able to adopt enough measures to meet all of that need within your existing urban growth boundary. Thus, the state requires an alternatives analysis. We'll look at sites around the UGB in their priority for inclusion into the boundary. So some of you have seen this before. This is an overview of what the state requires. I'm going to give you a rundown of the goals. There's some folks in here that are, I think, pretty well versed or very well versed in how the statewide planning system works. Others of you said, I'm not even sure what a goal is, maybe, as we go through this. By the time we get through the other end of this process, in 10 or 12 months, I think you'll have a pretty good understanding what this is all about and how complicated it is. So this is a flowchart that we put together that basically shows the steps. I know you can't read it, but that's not the point, that the city will have to go through to justify, to evaluate whether it can justify an expansion on the residential and the employment side. And so this is the technical analysis that the city has hired us to do. Our job is to do a good job with that and bring to this committee the big questions that need to be answered in order for us to pursue this. So our role in this is to help facilitate this process, but also to do the technical analysis that complies with the statewide planning requirements. So we've been through this before, and the policies that are germane to this study from the statewide planning goals are Goal 9, economy. This study is specifically looking at commercial and industrial lands, as well as the alternatives analysis. The other study that we're engaged in and have been working on addresses the Goal 10 housing component of it. So the city's essentially looking at all of those land needs at this point. Those two projects have converged and moving forward with them at one time. If you're going to look at urban expansion, you need to think about public facilities and transportation. So Goal 11 and Goal 12 become important in the context of this study, because where you put that development will influence what kinds of investments are required. Goal 14, urbanization, essentially at the foundational level, the city's got to justify where its UGB is, and the state, at least in some meetings, has asserted that the city needs to justify just splitting the urban growth boundary. The I think prevailing presumption is that it will get split at I-5, and that'll be the demarcation between the Eugene and Springfield urban growth boundaries. But this study is going to look at whether there's additional land needs and how those can be accommodated, if there are. And then a statutory requirement that we'll be looking at is the priority for inclusion of land in the UGB. I'll expand on these a little bit.
Is Goal 5 also part of your analysis too?
We are working with existing inventories, Philip, but we're not necessarily going through a detailed Goal 5 analysis.
But you account for the prior Goal 5 analysis as part of your inventory work.
And we will be looking at Goal 5 resources, as I'll point out in a minute, for the alternatives analysis. Springfield, like a lot of communities in this region, is when you begin looking outside the urban growth boundary on flat lands, you begin looking at a lot of wetlands and floodplains and things that have development constraints, as well as agricultural lands. So Goal 9 requires an economic opportunities analysis. There's four parts to this that we'll be looking at. We'll basically look at historical trends, look at comparative advantages of your community and other elements in that. Lori?
Bob, are you going to be amending the existing, adopted, and acknowledged area, or are you doing a whole new one?
We are starting from scratch on it. And this is, when you say existing adopted EOA, I assume that you're referring to the economic analysis that is in the Metro Plan?
No, that's Springfield's economic opportunities analysis.
I think she's referring to the commercial land study.
Oh, the commercial, right.
Complies with the goal, with the requirements for an EOA, is referred to as consistent with that.
Yeah, we will be probably updating that component, but from the inventory land inventory standpoint, we'll be starting from scratch on that. There's been a number of rule changes since that particular study was adopted in 2002 that have changed the approach that cities have to take, and in, in fact fact, we met with Tom Pope from DLCD yesterday to talk about what the state expectations are for doing these economic opportunities analyses, and it is, I think, changed quite substantially since the previous study was completed. And I think it's worth, at this point, taking another look at what the city's policies are going to be with respect to commercial lands. Goal 9 also requires the articulation of economic development objectives. In some sense, the Metro Plan does that. The city also has a set of objectives that one could pull out of your development code. And we'll be looking at those issues also. And then designate lands for commercial industrial uses. Again, the requirement is to have a 20-year supply. And to state how you're going to meet that 20-year need. And then finally, identify desired types of employment uses and desired site characteristics. So desired types of employment uses, is the state used term of art called target industries, what kinds of industries the city is going to attract or wants to attract, and then what kinds of sites do those types of uses require. So that's goal 9. Goal 10 is in process. Goal 10 defines needed housing types, and then it requires a housing needs analysis. Again, same parallel kind of structure. How much housing will you need over the planning period, of what types, and then how much land are you going to need to accommodate that housing? Goals 5 and 7, we tend to lump these together in the analysis because they're pretty closely related. They deal with natural resources and natural hazards. And our inventories will build from existing wetlands inventories and other constraints that the city has within their geographic information systems databases. But as we begin to look outside the urban growth boundary, we also need to consider the impact of natural hazards and goals 5 constraints, which might be wetlands, riparian areas, and other areas that would be deductions from the buildable lands based in those areas. So the process will identify those probable sites outside the UGB, identify unsuitable natural hazard areas, and then factor into the buildable lands and alternatives analysis. We'll also look a little bit at goals 8 and 11. So goal 8 is recreation, goal 11 is public facilities. We'll be reviewing the recently updated Willamette Lane master plan to see what their policies are on parkland acquisition, what their level of service standards are, how much parkland they want the community to have, and whether or not they've identified sites where they want to acquire lands in the future. Park schools, religious and fraternal organizations need to be considered into this, and so we'll be also talking to the school district about what kinds of sites they think they need over this planning horizon. And in streets and public facilities, so transportation, again, and water, sewer, et cetera, are all important in this analysis. When we boil all that analysis down, and if the conclusion is that the city does not have enough land to accommodate uses, then it's got to comply with this priority scheme, the statutory priority scheme. And basically what it says is the first priority is urban reserve areas. Springfield doesn't have urban reserve areas, so you have no priority one lands. Second priority are exception areas or non-resource lands. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the way our planning program works, essentially everything outside of an urban growth boundary is either designated, it was designated as resource land, farm or forest land for exclusive farm or forest use, or has been granted an exception to those goals 3 and 4, which allow more urban types of development, housing or commercial or industrial lands. So if those exception lands exist within study areas, those are going to be the very first priority for the city to bring in. And we will do some evaluation of that. The statute allows the inclusion of resource land that's completely surrounded by some exceptions areas. We haven't begun to look at this outside of the urban growth boundary yet, but if there are large blocks of exceptions areas with small pieces of ag land in the middle of them, then that ag land can probably be justified to be bought in. Marginal land. Lane County is a marginal land county. I'm still a little unclear on exactly. George probably understands what marginal land is better than I do in the context of Lynn County, there's only two counties in the state that have a marginal land designation.
Marginal land is land that can be classified as non-resource land based on its productive capacity, just, you know, whether it's site index for forest land or a soil classification. So as the county or landowner, you can apply for a marginal land exception to the regulations.
So essentially be looking at lower soil classifications or site productivity
indexes? It's based on capability.
Okay. And then finally, the bottom priority is resource lands, which goes from least to most productive. So that's the priority scheme that the city has to abide by.
I could just get a minute here, because sure. With the permission of the committee, and this is some process things, and perhaps Dave, but you can notice some things that I think might help us. We're right in the middle of this presentation. I don't want to break it up, but I think I just want to speak to maybe our next few months working together, a couple of things that will help us, because we're all in different places here. And so I might suggest a glossary of terms.
Sure.
We're already starting to throw a bunch of alphabet soup out there. Many here have been involved with land use, and some have never been involved. And then when we cite former studies, there's already been at least a half a dozen that there's either the electronic, probably be the best, that if we're going to really cite them because they're going to impact what we're looking at, or there's some background studies that are useful that we have access, every committee member, to that. That we have nameplates here that I can't read. I mean, I can read Mike Kelly's, that's about as my eyes are right now, but I think when we're talking with each other, that would be useful. That's just a process thing. But I do think that before we get into a whole bunch of other things that we're going to be referring to, that if our staff can kind of, the commonly used term, make those, just like you know, the definition of marginal land, that we would have that in front of us sort of to refer to and start that. There's going to be other suggestions, I think, that help us kind of have a common knowledge base. But just for our next meeting.
And one of the things we've done with other jurisdictions is actually give you large three-ring binders to store all of this material in, so that might be also something that would be helpful for you.
Can't wait.
Got several of those, but again, I think in terms of when we get a good, lively discussion, I think it's really easy to be kind of mistakenly referring to studies than in our minds, just like that chart for the flow chart for the state, even though it says it's too complicated, I've seen it, and at some point we're all going to have to kind of understand that a little bit too. So.
Okay, well, continuing on, I'm almost through this. So, in any lands that are considered for inclusion in the UGB, there's also the Goal 14 urbanization factors, which include efficient accommodation of identified land needs. And so if your land need is for flat sites, then there may be an opportunity to make a case around those. Orderly and economic provision of public facilities and services, one of the things that we'll do as we look around at these is relative cost analysis of service, with the understanding that anything that the city brings into the urban growth boundary, it is making an obligation over the long term to service it. Comparative environmental, energy, economic, and social consequences, and then compatibility to proposed urban use of nearby agriculture and forest activities occurring on farm and forest lands outside the UGB. So those are additional considerations. Go ahead, George.
I'm curious, Bob. Is our charge to actually identify specific sites as the final outcome, or are we going to just try and look at gross areas with approximate needs? What is the charge of this?
I would imagine that we'll be looking more at gross areas, but there'll be a series of discussions that I think we're proposing to facilitate with this group that would start with large areas and try and come up with some alternatives. Okay. And so when we say alternatives analysis, I do think that that is a requirement, and I think there'll be some lively discussions around what those alternatives are. ideally, if we could get this committee there, it'd be nice to have the committee recommend a specific package for forward to the Planning Commission. My experience has been that it's pretty complicated to get there, and there's an awful lot of analysis that has to go into this.
So and that's what I was wondering, is if we're going to be actually looking at some of these comparative analyses.
We will be bringing them to you.
Okay. So the other thing I noticed, you passed over goal 12, the transportation goal, which seems to be required to understand to do these types of analyses.
Well, the Division 24 urbanization rule update sort of kicked that off.
Okay.
And it did allow, but according to staff, that may come into much bigger play here as the transplant process fires up. And so we do have a transportation engineer on our team to identify those places that are going to be problematic, both inside and outside the urban growth boundary. So, for example, if the committee says we really want to focus redevelopment in Glenwood, and we're going to put a whole bunch of housing and commercial uses there, at what point does the transportation system break down and the city have to make investments to accommodate that development? Same thing goes for areas outside the urban growth boundary. So it'll be sort of a high-level engineering analysis, but hopefully it will give enough context to the committee to understand the relative trade-offs of some of those decisions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, so we facilitated a discussion with Council and Planning Commission back in March about this, and one of the things that we asked them to tell us was what they wanted us to do with this study and what their expectations were for us, the consultants, and by extension, you, the steering committee, on this. And I want to just summarize the things that we think they told us. There's a couple folks here that were at that meeting, so if we mischaracterize anything, feel free to set the record straight. Reasonable, simple analysis. It was pretty clear to us that what they want as decision makers is something that they can understand the trade-offs, that doesn't get them bogged down into details. They need to be reasonable and defensible. In other words, make lead towards decisions that don't necessarily steer the city straight into appeals. Provide for a range of site sizes and types. In other words, make sure that those identified land needs are met, however the committee chooses to direct us to meet them. And then avoid getting stuck in the details, and I've been through enough of these processes, and Lee can maybe attest to a little bit of the discussions I've had with the Housing Committee. You can get bogged down in talking about things like, well, how much multifamily housing do we need? Should it be 40%? Should it be 50%? And I think those are important discussions, but our experience in other jurisdictions has been you begin to miss the point about what you're planning for here if you get bogged down in those numbers. And it can turn into a numbers game, but there are not predefined formulas that lead to an outcome. This is about community development. It's about not necessarily about turning a bunch of numbers out that lead you to an empirical decision, in my opinion. So keep the analysis as simple as possible, which is, I think it's a good direction, but it's a challenge for us to do that given the state planning guidance that we have to work within. Future flexibility. Policy should provide flexibility, allowing different approaches to managing land uses, acknowledging similarities and site needs for some commercial and industrial firms. In other words, that line between commercial and industrial is getting a little blurred, and maybe there's some approaches that can be used to recognize that and provide flexibility in siting of those types of businesses, and anticipate changes in needs for services and amenities. So what's coming in the future with respect to transitions in the economy, and how does the city accommodate that? How do you look into the crystal ball and figure out what the land use strategy is going to be to respond to those changes?
Okay. I'm not sure what the first bullet point means, Bob. What does that mean? Different approaches?
To,
is that governmental approaches? Or
Yeah, I think, I think it's, these are land use strategies, so different approaches can include incentive-based approaches or regulatory approaches, different approaches than exist now.
Okay.
So, in other words, don't constrain yourself to thinking that the policies of the past have to continue into the future.
Yeah. And similarly, the last bullet point, will there be another group, or is it this charge for this group to actually look into the crystal ball and come up with some, this is a 20-year planning horizon, but anticipate changes in needs for services and amenities based on what? Another study, state trends? Is there someone who's going to?
That's part of the economic opportunities analysis.
Okay.
And so that's, we're the ones who are charged with putting that together, but we'll be working through this committee. We've got some meetings set up in June with the Council and Planning Commission to talk about what their impressions of this are. We're also going to be doing a series of stakeholder interviews to get local opinion. You're probably somebody who's on our list to talk to.
So doesn't that kind of refer to if we end up at the end of the day making a recommendation to bulge the UGB out here, then there might be a fire station that needs to go in there? Or, I mean, is that what that is talking about? When you talk about services and amenities based on the other decisions we make, that we're forecasting where investments might need to be made?
It's partially talking about the changes we've seen in the economy in the last 10, 15 years.
Okay, gotcha.
With the internet economy. Who needed high-speed fiber optic before?
Okay.
That kind of anticipate the change.
So then you're going to do some kind of crystal ball analysis that comes back and says, well, here are the past trends, but now we have $5 a gallon diesel fuel. You can expect this kind of stuff. That's what you'll come back and say. You can expect these kind of future
trends.
Yeah,
we can give you some indication in that one of the ways we might work through some of those issues is thinking about scenarios and how the city might respond to different issues as they arise. But yeah, I think those are the kinds of things that we need to look at. And our hope is that we'll begin to facilitate that discussion with you at the next meeting. We've already gathered a lot of information and pulled it together. And we've got a number of business interests sitting around the table that I think can help us understand both trends in existing industries and then the impacts of some of the broader trends. And there's some things that I think are going to be very difficult to anticipate, for example, federal policy around climate change. And so I think we need to get some direction from you on how you'd like to respond to that, because we're just here to do the technical analysis and then move something forward to Planning Commission and Council. Right, consider costs and opportunities. I think this gets to Carrie's issue about the implications. If you do bulge out your UGB, then what's it going to cost? There are obvious costs that are associated with that, but consider redevelopment costs also. And it's one of the key things that we tend to go around and tell people is redevelopment is more costly than greenfield development. From a business perspective, maybe not from the community's perspective, given what infrastructure you got in place. But think about those. Recognize that some areas that you bulge out may be pretty costly to service, and we'll do some analysis of that to help the committee better understand what those costs may be and what the trade-offs are. And then capitalize on existing opportunities. What opportunities does Springfield have, and how can you make the best use of those opportunities? And then finally, the one thing the council directed us, I thought pretty clearly, was to try and get this job done. But when we go and talk to communities about how long a UGB expansion process takes, we usually tell them 24 to 36 months to start with. We're trying to pull all this technical analysis together within a 12-month period. And it's a lot of work to get done, and it's a lot of information for a committee like this to process. So there's going to be a lot of information coming to you, and there's going to be a lot of complicated trade-offs to weigh, and you may not feel completely prepared as a committee to move forward on those things. So we'll try and move you through this and identify the key decision points that we want from the committee as best we can. Focus on the outcomes, not the process, so the outcomes being getting documents that can be forwarded up to the decision-making review, and not getting bogged down in the process steps, if that makes sense to you. And focus on the key community development objectives, housing, economic development, and public services, provide enough land to meet the 20-year growth forecast, and articulate how you're going to do that, and develop the package, as I said. So that is the direction the council gave us, and that we think by extension comes to you as a committee. It's a fairly broad direction, but it also puts some sideboards on this discussion. Lori?
So then the process comes later. We're not going to focus on process now. Is that like, are you considering, because you're going to make goal one findings, or are you going to make those findings based on something other than this, or is this a component of that? Is there something subsequent
to the process steps?
Other than the, you know, the obligatory public hearings? I know the workshops that you were mentioning earlier.
Our scope has, when I say process, I mean bogged down in processing information and trying to move things forward. In other words, don't get down in the weeds and focus too much on things that aren't important in this. So when I say process, I'm really saying focusing on the committee process and moving this discussion forward. We believe that the structure that the city has built into this project broadly, between the stakeholder committee, between the survey, the community workshops, will meet the intent of goal one, and will achieve adequate public involvement to move a package forward. So those process steps are built in, those public involvement input steps are built into the project.
So just a process thing too, is there, before, this is maybe one of the last times we're going to get this much time to say, here's what the city council's charge is for this group. I don't expect that at the beginning of every meeting we're going to go through the same kinds of things. And I guess I just ask the committee if there's any questions. This is a good spot, I think, to stop and say, do we all know why we're here and what's expected? And there may be along the road some process versus product kind of things that we'll get into. But generally speaking, I just would maybe encapsulate that too for whatever documents that we get, let's keep that in front of us about the city council's charge and how they'd like to see the work. I think that's important too.
I guess I just have a comment, you know, looking at the work ahead in 12 months to do it, and I remember reading from Beth and others that were anticipating the monthly meeting or whatever. I, you know, with the diverse group interest here, I think we're going to have a lot of discussion about a number of these topics, and you know, just my viewpoint that I can see a couple months from now, after we get through some of the preliminary stuff and some get feedback from some of the stakeholders or from the focus groups, whatever they're called, the other folks who will have input to us on these things. Once we start getting that information, I mean, I can seriously see a need to have 2 or 3 months from now, full day or half day meetings, in order for everybody here to have a chance to influence it or talk about their thoughts about that issue and sort of come to some consensus on these important steps. I mean, almost to the point, we only met monthly. If you miss one or two meetings, this group's going to be long gone on issues that you may, foundational issues that you may say, wait a minute, I don't really agree with kind of where we've gone on this, and we said we did that 2 months ago. I guess I'm just saying at some point in time, maybe not now, but we meet next, we ought to sort of try to develop a 2 or 3 month schedule of time and really allocate enough time in our schedules to do a good job with this. It's an important activity, and I'm just not sure with 12 to 15 people, whatever, talking about how they feel about it, and in a couple hours, if we can get a whole lot done in a couple hours of any substance, they could stand and test the time at the council, kind of saying, they went by majority vote, it went 6-7 to recommend you do this, and those type of things. That's not a, I don't think any direction the council, they got a split vote on whatever the recommendations are. So, enough said, I'm just saying that I think we're going to have to meet for many hours in the middle of this process to get some work done.
Good point. When we did the first metro plan, it took 6 years.
Well, we're not updating transplant here. I guess what we
took 8 years.
Maybe what David can help us with is when I think we're going to find some logical places where a two-hour meeting may not work when you're trying to reach some conclusions so that you can move from one step to another in our work. And I would say that Lee and I will work with you and build in if it seems wise to what Mike is referring to. But with the consensus of the committee, people's time, I can only speak for mine, and everyone needs to speak for their own, so it needs to be pretty agreeable that, you know, if that does happen, that in a couple of months there's a number of issues, and rather than just kind of keep leaving that and going forward and forward and forward, that there's a logical stopping point, that all of us agree to give that extra time. It wouldn't be, I don't think, prudent to just have a handful of people say, well, I have a half an hour or a half a day on this day or something. So we should, if we're going to do that, if it looks like it does build up to that, that we factor that in pretty quickly, because I think for people's planning purposes, it would have to be something we anticipate. But I don't know more about that.
I think one of the things that's helpful, and you kind of did it in the residential study side, is when we get into the decisions or points that have to be made at the posed to us in advance as questions. What is the group answer to this? And a lot of the information, in Mike's word, is the basic information that we'll be making decisions driven by population that has already kind of been done.
And that's a part that I hope the committee can move through relatively quickly and get on to, because I think Mike's point is a really important one. And we're doing this exact same process in Grants Pass, and we started in the fall of 06, and we thought we were going to move it through pretty fast, and what we found out was the committee just couldn't process through this information as quickly as the city had wanted them to. And so what I don't want the committee ever to feel is like we're driving you through decisions that you're not ready to make. I think that's a bad outcome for all of us. Our challenge, and this is really a big challenge in my experience trying to facilitate these processes, is to figure out how to sequence each meeting and what information we're bringing to you and what decisions that we're asking from you, and whether or not we're able to provide enough information for you to feel comfortable moving forward. The people that get to facilitate this, 30 days between meetings seems like a lot until you're the ones that are preparing the materials to get ready for the next meeting. Then it seems like it goes by in a blink of an eye, and it gets challenging to keep up with the pace of it. So I think the committee has some ability, I believe, to drive the process, but again, keep in mind the council's direction is try and move through this expediently to the extent that you can.
So, do you have, you mentioned about a public workshop in the first meeting in May. Do you have a date for that? Do you have a calendar you can give us where you lay out, you know, your target month one, this is the...
Yeah, I think that's May, it's scheduled for May 20th right now, which is a Tuesday. In addition to that, we'll be having more as well, but that's the first one.
I think as a procedural point, we'd like to get consensus from this group on when you want to meet on a monthly basis, and then I think what we'll do is come back to you at the next meeting and give you basically an agenda for the next 3 to 6 meetings, telling you what we think we're going to bring to you for consideration.
Okay, I think you just clarified a point. David started out by saying we're going to meet maybe every 4 or 5 weeks at first, but I think most of the people here that I know have pretty full schedules. It would be good to set a fixed date, and just speaking for myself, the fourth Thursday works great. If this works for people, this is a good day for me.
Yeah, I think that when I first was trying to form this committee with everybody, the idea of trying to schedule each meeting every month and trying to coordinate this many people's schedule is near impossible. So I do think the intent is that we would set a date, you know, like the fourth Thursday. But, I think there's opportunity to modify that a bit. For example, next month, like we mentioned, May 20th is when we're scheduling the public workshop. So that's a Tuesday, and then that fourth Thursday would be, 2 days later. And so one thing that I was going to suggest was, well, maybe the fifth Thursday of that month, because there is a fifth month. But if not, we can stick with the fourth as well. So,
guess you run into that holiday weekend in May.
Or it'll be a Thursday, but you do, then that's Memorial Day. Some want to take a longer one.
Yeah.
Do you have a time on that workshop?
Yes, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
And where is that at?
I'm still working on the location.
And what is the 4th of June? I think I'm busy.
The 22nd is the 4th Thursday in June, May rather, and the 29th is
the 29th is right in the middle of the time, so.
Well, this is May. You're asking about June?
June would be the 26th.
June's the 26th, yeah.
Is that you had a question?
Yeah, actually, I just want to make sure that the committee knows that the city council does not have a grand illusion here that this committee is going to have this prepared in something before the planning commission, the council, in a matter of months. I mean, first of all, as an advisory, and then eventually a planning commission to the city council, the ultimate is being certified by the state. And so if it doesn't meet muster from the state, then we just did an exercise of futility, and that's just not our interest. So this is one thing. We just feel it's very important. The committee, we want this committee to do the due diligence here and do it right. So whatever the time is, that's what the time's going to be. So if you're ready for the long haul, we're ready for the long haul. And so I think that that's, I just want to make sure you understand that this work here is extremely important. And obviously, it's something the city's not undertaken, something especially this exercise, in a long time, right, Mike?
It has been.
So,
way overdue.
So you have some practical deadlines. Which,
well, we have practical deadlines, but.
Which are the end of 2009 for the 3337.
Yeah, and so if it makes muster, but at the same time, if it's not going to work out, then I think then we need to make sure that this is going to be done right. Now, the end of 2009, that's, you're talking about a year and a half.
So, well, and that's for the technical analysis. That doesn't mean that the city is needed to move a UTV or whatever set of policy packages forward for final adoption.
I may be out of office by the time that happens, so.
You'll still be on the committee, though.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's this departure point that we really, I like the idea that there are expectations, because I've served on a lot of efforts when the expectations were either mushy or non-existent, and you tend to feel like you could take lots of time to talk about every nuance, and I don't believe in the end I ever felt like we really made a contribution with that. This is my interpretation is this is a citizen's look at a pretty far-reaching, future-looking kind of process that most cities in Oregon have to go through, are supposed to go through, in fact, by law, and that we kind of keep some of our thinking on that plane. We're going to discover, I think, a lot of details that will be surprising and worth discussion. But I would hope that we do. And Sid, it's good to have you here coming to these meetings, because you can always say, when that discussion at the city council was more like this, and I appreciate that it's going to take maybe longer, perhaps in 12 months, but sometimes these things go on as we just referenced two of them that went on for almost a decade. And that's not what I'd like to be here.
It's better to have the short goal than we have to.
I do have one question about the open house before we go on. I know we want to get off. We're not going to meet before that open house. So can you give me just sort of what the headline of that open house, when you advertise for citizens to come, is it going to be, what's the nature of what they can expect at this open house in May?
This is the first of a few workshops, and this first part will be looking at similar things to what the survey is looking at, which, I don't know, probably not everybody here has had a chance to look at the survey. I'm actually going to send you all a link to that survey. I'll try to do that tomorrow, but it's been posted on our city website for about 3 weeks now. It'll be posted up till May 27th, but what it gets at is how do people want to see the city grow in the next 20 years? what kind of amenities are important, you know, parks or natural space, things like that. You know, what kind of density is appropriate, things like that. It also gets specifically into economic development issues. You know, to what level do citizens feel like the city should try to encourage certain kinds of jobs or growth or step back and not do that, things like that. So that's, I think, a good guide to what the public workshop is going to get at.
I think I found it just on the main city webpage, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a link on the front page, and then it will take you to the planning website as well. One thing I also wanted to mention was, again, we're going to be going through a lot of information, and we have even a two-hour meeting can seem like a long time for, you know, people that are really busy, I know. So I did want to mention, you guys will have homework, of course, and so we'll be giving you documents and things to review. That's something that we've done with the housing committee that's worked really well, and it gives you time to you know, take a few weeks or whatnot to review something, and then even ask staff, or we can relate it to the consultant, you know, ask questions on things before you get to the meeting, and then that way you're not just looking at something brand new, but you have some time to kind of digest it.
Just another process issue here. When can we expect to get that material then? When should we look for it? How?
Oh, the binder of additional
information. Well, no, just before every meeting, there'll be a packet of information, presumably emailed to us. When should we look for that? 10 days before the meeting? What's your target on that?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, the bare minimum would be a week, but ideally a week and a half.
Okay.
You know, 10 days to 2 weeks. Depending, a lot of it's going to depend on the size, too.
Okay.
You know, if we're getting to something that's a larger format, you know, more pages, we're going to try to give you more time than if it's something that's, you know, something smaller to look at.
And when will the minutes from the previous meeting be distributed for people who, say, weren't able to attend and might want to schedule a catch-up thing with somebody?
I would say, again, a week and a half to a week at the bare minimum.
Okay, so they'll come out as part of the packet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that sound agreeable to people?
I think the other opportunity with this is all this material can be posted on the city's website. And is, as a matter of course, with most cities that we work with, they tend to just put it up there so that anybody who's interested can look at it.
I was going to suggest that rather than sending emails with large PDF files and stuff, if you just send us and say it's there, just go to the website and download it. That's easier.
I just think it's good to get some of this process stuff out. Bob and Beth, you're going to be our folks during this entire cooking conference, okay?
Yeah.
And I agree with Lee that you know, accessing that, not kind of messing up your computer with a bunch of PDFs, but in the meetings, again, this is one of those things you don't think about all the time, but there should be a paper supply of these. It's really hard to come here and start talking about documents that are maybe 2 pages long on your computer, but nobody has them in front of you when, you know, Lori and I are talking about them. And I think we might not need them all the time, but that if it does become a point that on page 13, paragraph 2, we should all be able to look at that as well in these meetings. We may not carry a 3-ring binder full of all of this stuff, but they'll have to be present in the room, I think.
I guess it might be helpful for us to poll you, not right now, about whether people want printed copies of materials. Because some of you may want printed copies of materials, it just makes it easier for you to get those distributed by mail, or we bring them to the meeting so that you've got them in your file. Others who don't, that's fine also.
Which, this is kind of an important question. Does everybody want it printed, or do you want to download it yourself and print what you think is important? Because I have a feeling there's going to be a multitude of documents. And
I think you have a difference on documents, reference documents. I'm thinking of how you did the residential land study. And the work papers that you're going to use in the committee meeting, which are not quite as voluminous. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Perhaps you could give everyone a binder and bring the materials hole punch to the meetings. People, if they don't want to use the paper, can leave it here, and people who want it can put it in their binder. Does that make sense?
Karen.
I definitely read offline. I can't sit and read a 100-page document on a computer screen because I have to write
on things that I'm reading. So if it's in color and the color is going to be important to me when I'm reading it, it would be really helpful if I had a hard copy. If it's not in color, I can download my own.
So I guess what I'm hearing is that, to Lee's point, there's going to be some things that you know is going to, they're going to be on the agenda. Everyone needs to eyes on that piece of paper, and we should get a paper copy of that. Mm-hmm. And then we should have the ability, as George mentioned, if there's documents and people can make a choice. That is something I don't have any background in. I really need to read that. So you've heard that. We'll see if we can proceed that way. I just know that sometimes when you have 3 months go by in your binder, no matter how big it could be, already full, and most of the time people haven't really looked at any of that, but it just goes in, and I hope that we can avoid that kind of thing. You just start feeling guilty about carrying that 10-pound thing around that you haven't read.
And it will be that large.
I know.
Probably pretty quickly.
So what I'm hearing is as many printed copies as possible.
Especially the graphics.
The other question I had was this is going to be a very dynamic process with a diverse opinion base. And in your past experience, Bob, you said everyone's going to be entitled to vote, but are we going to, every time we need to get closure on an issue, is there going to be a vote, or is there going to be a point where we use more kind of informal consensus? You guys may need to talk about that. Maybe you have an opinion, but it would be good to let people know what the expectations are.
I agree with what George said, but I think it's important that we agree. I think the co-chairs can suggest a process, but I think it's important all of us agree right now is how we're going to do it. We're going to work towards consensus, and only if we can't get consensus, go to majority vote. And is there going to be a quorum? There's, I think, 15 folks on the committee. If 5 are gone, you got 10 there. So you got 6 in favor of something, 4 against. Is that sufficient to move on and say, that's done? Person comes back that's been one of the 5 missing and wants to debate and go, sorry, we made that decision 3 weeks ago. Is that okay? Or are we going to say, no, there has to be, if there's 15, we've got to have, 8 or 9 affirmative votes to do something before we move on? Or, I think we need to talk about those things now because they get to be a great debate later on when you're in mist and you've got turf issues there and you're debating these process things at that time.
Let me ask Bob, and I noticed by our thing, we have a 30-minute item on the agenda that we haven't started yet. I'm watching that clock go around. So can you give us just 2 or 3 examples, you're in the Grants Pass thing, of where we would vote? Is this wordsmithing kind of statements, or is it just give us an example or two where the committee actually will find themselves, who agrees with this, and there's hands raised in this process.
Okay. In Grants Pass, right, they are using a voting system. And we weren't as elegant about that process as you are here. I think it's Mike is exactly right. We didn't define the process because we want you to decide on what that's going to look like. In Grants Pass, the kinds of things that came to a vote were when we were doing the housing study, one of the key sets of assumptions are the housing mix and the density assumptions. And so there was considerable debate, and the home builders wanted one thing and some other people wanted another thing. And there's a lot of discussion around it. And so eventually somebody made a motion and they voted on it and went forward. We finished up the study, and then at the point the study was finished, they reviewed it, made comments on it, made a motion, voted to send it to Planning Commission, and those were consensus votes. As it turns out, the City Council decided to do something different, but that's the way these things work sometimes.
Bob, would the process allow for, preferences presented? What we're doing is trying to develop recommendations that ultimately will go up and the City Council will make the decision on. It seems to me that it would be helpful to try, as a general rule, to try to reach consensus. And if not, you're going to vote. And if you have a vote, if there's a way to reflect in whatever goes forward that there was dissension and represent the majority view and the minority view.
And absolutely, that's the way that we've been working with staff in Grants Pass.
So all the advice goes forward to the decision makers.
When we took the housing study to council, there were dissenting opinions, and basically we went in and said, this is what the committee said, and here's some other testimony that occurred, and let them weigh that so that they had all that information in front of them.
I've seen that work, and maybe I would just suggest that, because this might start pretty early in this process, that it is going to be something, it's going to be like George says, well, I make a motion that this should be this, and we're all going to talk, and it's going to change, it's going to ebb and flow, and there's going to be finally, we're going to have to adopt something, and it'll be to the acceptance of the committee. But in the minutes there, when that discussion begins, so George says, I move this, Lee says, I second that, at that moment, if we can encapsulate that discussion from that point on to when all the wordsmithing and it was adopted by the committee, then I think the city council, anyone else looking at that, can see the dynamics of George's motion and where it ended up and who said what and what are the issues were brought up to help define what we ended up being. And I don't think, you know, 8 to 7 votes work well in these settings, and we would probably be wise not to do that necessarily, and, you know, not recognize that as consensus. We're not quite there if half of you are saying no. So, but I think when you show the dynamics, anybody reading through there, especially just highlighting, they, you know, here's a vote that was taken, can kind of say, that's what they went through. They processed all this stuff.
And as a point of process, we have a number of work sessions with council and planning commission scheduled for this. And I believe the committee, if you can't get the consensus on something, can ship something up to them to get direction on. Or you could send them alternatives for consideration. So if there's somehow impasse that occurs within this committee and you feel like you're not going to get past it, maybe getting direction from them, the ultimate decision makers, will be helpful to move the discussion forward.
So have we kind of adopted a way to make decisions at all? And now we need to vote.
I think what I've heard people or seen people agreeing to is that we would try to seek consensus, vote as a last resort, and if we did have a vote, that it would ask that whatever went forward represented both the majority and the minority positions.
Okay.
And that 8-7 votes weren't good.
That's not good. Well, yeah.
Well, we'll do our best to encapsulate that in the minutes and then get it back to you and maybe back out to the committee to make sure that we got it right.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone, for that.
You got to go to the seal card process.
I'll let you run it.
All right. All right. The time has been passed. All right, so now we're going to do more of an interactive exercise and get you guys out of your chairs, hopefully wake everybody up a bit. So we've got a half hour left. We're hoping to, we slotted 30 minutes for this, but do people need a 5-minute break, or does this idea of the exercise sound good enough? Well, let me first explain it really fast so you can make a decision. It's called a snow card process, and I don't know if some people may have done this, some of you may not have. And I got a bunch of pieces of paper over here with markers, and what I'm going to ask you to do is grab a few of those sheets of paper and then give you sometimes about 10 minutes or so to jot down what you think are key issues that need to be addressed in this project. And then what we're going to do is we're going to pin them up on this wall here. We got a bunch of pins, and try to write large enough to see it as people stand back. And then we'll have a short, just a kind of a brief discussion of it. But what it's going to do is create this wall full of these issues that they're going to turn out to be really diverse, I think, with this group of people that we have here. And you'll get a flavor, I think, of what what issues need to be facing this project. So does that sound like something you're ready to start now, or do you want a 5-minute break? Start now.
The intent of this process is for you to identify things that we need to pay attention to. The committee would like us to pay attention to things that the committee thinks are important.
And they're issues, not steps or tactics.
Do we need an example, just so we kind of know what page we're on? David, do you
need
to give an example?
They can address any aspect of this work that you wanted to. So you could say, for example, make sure that that there's sufficient land to accommodate industry. But you could also say, make sure that the committee functions well. So I would say just be broad about it. If there's things that you think are important for us to understand, let us know.
Are we limited to three or?
How many would you like from each?
One.
What's the one more card?
One per page.
Yeah, just put one issue per card, and you know, write down as many issues as you feel are important, and we'll try to fit them all on the wall.
Mike's got issues.
So let's do this for about 10 minutes, and then we'll see how it's going, and then if we need to add a few more minutes, we will. But otherwise, we'll start talking about it.
Do you have any more markers? Markers?
Yeah.
That's coming around with the
rest of the board. Yeah,
perfect. And when you're done with your issues, you can paper pin. You can pin them up on the wall.
More pens if anybody's doesn't work right.
This was almost dead, by the way.
Okay. See, I put that on purpose too.
I know, I'm doing a lot of work.
What's up?
Dead.
Oh, it's trash. City property.
much longer with the cap off, and I have some real pretty ideas.
Are we flying yet?
So, for those land use architects who like the color thing with these, you must have some fun days.
Okay. All right.
got some pent-up stuff.
Pent-up stuff going?
Great.
Do you need any?
Boy, he does, doesn't he?
He's writing a novel.
Excellent.
Everyone starts to
get sure they have paid versus people in your lobby, you know, group of balance there. Some people you feel about that, you think that you're trying to talk them into, to your view, to your view.
Here's a card.
More group hug.
You change your mind on one?
Yeah, well, I lost my train of thought on it, so. Yeah, you're not kidding.
They lost their crank. That's going to be interesting how that plays out.
Depends on what elementary you're looking at. Many were from 2002.
So,
I'm a long way.
Is that unbelievable? I'm so touched up.
Moved in with
totally got it.
Not at all. Identify any gaps and types of information and if I'm aware of any additional sources. Shall we just do it that way?
That's short term. 45 to 60 years.
Is it part of this one? Hotel occupancy for the last 8 years by week. You can chart it however you want. It's at itself. I've got room tax collections for the last 9 years.
So that's what more we need to do.
What we've tried to do here is categorize these into different groups, but this gives you a good understanding of the vast array of issues we're looking at. Beth did a good job of really helping us categorize these. So Beth, maybe you can help me out there. we got natural resources as a category right here. You can see open space, environmental pollution concerns, conservation, sustainability. When I'm looking at these, I just realize this project, the breadth of all the issues we're facing, this is really, it's inclusive of pretty much everything you can think of: population growth, natural resource preservation, jobs, all these things. Beth, what else do we have here?
We have a few things about infrastructure, and it's going to take a little bit more over here. This is mostly about Springfield and a bit about visioning, some ideas of about jobs, that kind of thing. We have a little bit about wanting good redevelopment targets. And then these are all about specific things about site needs. So what kinds of sites does Springfield need?
I think even that term identify shovel ready, that might be a, something in the glossary where that, that everybody, that really means something very specific, almost by law, in the state.
Yeah, for those that don't know, shovel ready is for industrial lands that you'll hear referred to a lot. Governor and the state was seeking to have jurisdictions try to prepare lands that are shovel ready, meaning they're ready to be developed for industrial uses. And the idea is economic development. You're helping facilitate new jobs coming to the communities. And, you know, having an area set aside so you know there's not a lot of issues that are going to hold up a project, so to speak.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Springfield has a few of those sites.
Pardon?
Springfield has a few of the sites. We will be talking about that.
But I don't know how these other studies have played out, but you know, when I look at all these alternatives, and we were talking about, Bob and I were talking about things like, What's the increased price of fuel going to do to the assumptions about what our future economy is going to look like? Does it mean that things won't be shipped in as far? There'll be more local production of food, fuel, and fiber, and that's where the economy will grow. Are we going to, maybe the way that some of these things can only be answered is by like having different scenarios, you know, that someone, that the policymakers have to choose from. We've made these assumptions, and if these hold true, this is what our needs will be. We've made these assumptions, and if these hold true, then is that something?
I think that's certainly possible. It takes a little bit of work, and by definition, we've got to simplify them.
Right.
And we need to get them down to a reasonable number, say 3 to 5, so that you can really contrast the differences. I think it does make sense to go through an exercise like that. I think that the other part that relates to what George is saying is that this committee has the ability, as we go through this analysis, to also say, you know, one of the things that Springfield doesn't want to focus on in its economic development objectives, for example, are transportation-intensive industries. So, you know, we're industries that require considerable trucking.
Don't you think we need to know where we are now?
Yeah, well, that's where we're starting. We've already done a fair amount of information collection.
For me, I have no idea where we are.
Well, as it turns out, that's what we're going to come back to at the next meeting, is an overview of the regional and local economy.
One thing I think I would just say in this case, again, to keep foremost in our minds, is that this is a 20-year horizon. So like the fuel thing, I think even if you were looking at this 2 years ago, I mean, there's some short-term things that are happening that you have population, and there's a few other indexes that you can pretty much rely on, but a lot of the other stuff, you know, even 5 years, it was 20 years ago, most of the stuff that that's happening in our economy could not have been predicted. Royal Caribbean, I mean, things like that. So I would be just kind of cautious about saying, you know, last month fuel was here, this month it's here, so 20 years from now it'll be, you know, $180 a gallon. That sometimes those are really hard to project, but what might be more likely is heavy industry zoning just isn't going to happen in Springfield. I mean, that trend has been lower and lower and lower and lower. And then like transportation, what's a general statement that could be as true as it could be in 20 years? I'll be more specific, the harder it is to kind of get your hands on it and crystal ball it. But so next time, I guess what you're referring to is we're going to get some benchmarks about where the economy is right now, where our land inventory is, what the uses are. Right.
Well, that just happens to be the next item on our agenda. So do we want to just talk about it here, or do you want folks to sit down?
We got 5 minutes in here, and I'll only stand up for 5 more minutes. Let's just talk through where we're going. Yeah. So we have a number of things that you directed us to do. We will do those things, and one of them outputs we'll give you is a preview of what we think the meetings will be, I'd say maybe 4 months out. I think George mentioned this is a dynamic process. And he also said it's going to be a hell of a project. And I agree with that. This is really complicated. There's going to be some work for this committee to do, and I hope you're ready to roll up your sleeves. But it's also extremely important. What you're doing is setting a 20-year growth blueprint for this community. I think it's a combination of trying to gain what the trends are going to be, but it's also a combination of saying, what does this community want to look like? Because there's a lot of ability to self-determine what happens here. So we'll come back to you with that. Dan had suggested getting background documents together and posting them up where you have the ability to access and review them. We'll give you direction on which things we think are important. We'll summarize some of the procedural elements. I really appreciate the committee engaging in that discussion because it's really important for us to all understand the ground rules as we get started in this, because there almost certainly will be some disagreements about approaches and strongly felt positions. It's fine, that's why we invited you. And then at the next meeting, we'll bring out information that the first round of this cycle is to give you an overview of where you're at and get you thinking about what's going. We've got the public workshop coming up on the 20th. We encourage you all to attend. And if any of you feel so inclined as you'd like to help facilitate at that meeting, talk to David. We probably could use some facilitators. We hope to get a good crowd at that meeting.
Which format of the workshop? Is it the traditional sort of posters and walk around? And
probably a small group process. Huh? Maybe a little overview of I think it's really going to focus on helping us articulate what the community wants. And so we're probably going to get people in rounds and in groups of eight or something like that and have to talk about those issues. So.
And we'll be able to do the survey at this workshop?
We'll present some of the survey results, yeah. Survey results. It's still going to be open at that point. But and then we've got some council work sessions coming up in June where we'll cover some of the information that we've presented to you, and also hopefully you can pose questions that you'd like us to take up with them at that point. The first one will be the economic overview. The second one will be getting councils and planning commissions input on economic development vision and strategy. What do they want? So those are things that are coming up.
Good question on that part right there. I mean, you know, groups like the council and planning commission do better to react to something than to say, what do you want for your economic future? They're saying, you thought, well, give me some choices. And so you say that the Planning Commission Council is going to be making some policy directives on economic development. I assume that there's a process to say, you know, we can go this way, we can go this way, we can go this way, and which of the three or four do you prefer and why? I mean, is that right?
Or are you just going to say, you know, like on these is, we haven't quite sorted out exactly right. How we want to move forward with this. We need to talk to staff a little bit more. In some instances, we've gone directly to them with a draft set of goals and objectives and said, react to this. In other instances, we've given them alternatives. I think that since I'm getting from this group is maybe take some different options to them to discuss. So I think your point's well taken.
I mean, I guess I'm almost trying to figure out, maybe it'll come clear next month or two, sort of who leads and who follows. For example, economic development objectives of the council. What they'd like to see in this community 20 years from now, as far as industrial and commercial growth and values and a number of different things. Is that something that's a separate process that kind of goes to them and that becomes feedback to us as we're looking for land and other kind of places to try to accommodate what we think by policy the council wants to try to accomplish? Or are they looking to us to kind of say, and the workshops and the survey, other things for the community to kind of say, here should be our economic.
We were envisioning it more as the latter. For them to give you some more direction about what they'd like to see. Now, I imagine the way it's going to actually turn out is it's going to be some back and forth there. That the final word will not occur at this early juncture in this process, but I think we're trying to hit this from a number of different directions pretty early on to get our team focused so that we're not going off in some direction that neither the committee nor your elected officials expect us to. The final thing we wanted to do, and Dave will take names of volunteers who want to help facilitate, was to schedule our next meeting. And I think the dates of either May 22nd or May 29th came up. The 22nd is the Thursday before
I heard you say that was too soon after the
Memorial Day. The 29th is...
Why don't we focus on the 29th if we're going to try and do it before?
We just wanted to forge and see who was available.
Thursday nights work well for me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we could do a poll of hands for the 4th, Thursday, or the 5th, Thursday of May.
Okay. So how many, let me see a hand, show of hands, how many for the 4th Thursday, which is the 22nd of May? How many would prefer
Prefer?
Can do it? So how many for the 29th? How many can do for the
29th? It would be more possible.
More possible. More possible.
I think so.
Lori, can you do both? Oh, you can do both?
I'm going to be out of town to do the 20th.
I was looking. I didn't get an actual number, but it looks like there's both days work. But there's no matter which day we go with, there's going to be a couple people that I can be able to make.
So we'll just make both days.
No, wait a second.
I think one of the keys is to, if you maybe email poll people or something, but put out enough dates out there and try and get a regular schedule, then we can all keep our calendars clear for those days. You know, this close in.
I only have people here. I mean,
29.
Somebody suggested the 4th Thursday.
You may get the same time every month. You can kind of plan around.
I would really like to see that as the 4th Thursday of every month, just as a standing meeting.
Does anybody have a problem with that?
It works.
Okay. You just got your date.
Okay.
Great.
So, May
22nd. Make all our decisions.
So, at this point, do we want to keep the same time, Bob? 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
6 works for folks?
Yeah.
All right, and I will try to, let's assume this room unless you hear otherwise. So, sometimes there's conflicts with other meetings, but...
So you need to rush out and schedule it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get easier as we go further out.
Yes. All right, is there any last questions before we wrap up? Concerns or...
We'll send out contact information for us, and... if things come up, feel free to contact Dave or myself, and be happy to respond to whatever questions you may have.
I'm not sure that maybe you sent this out, but did you send out a roster of the members on the committee, or just the...
No.
That'd
be helpful. We haven't yet.
We can do that.
Yeah, just so you know, the actual numbers on the list, there's 21 stakeholders that are listed, so there's a few folks that aren't here tonight. That includes, let's see, we have 3 students, there's 2 high school positions and 1 college student that we weren't able to fill those yet, and that's really has to do with school schedules with the summer coming up and stuff. But so hopefully we'll get those filled soon. But yeah, we'll send out the roster. You can take a look at it. We'll probably, I'm going to the Planning Commission or Committee for Citizen Involvement on May 6th. With a recommendation to add 2 additional categories. So you'll see that on the list as well.
You got another table?
Yeah. I mean, what we've gone through over the last several months is trying to include as many stakeholders as possible, but then also trying to remember we got to keep it manageable with committee. So it's definitely a difficult task, but so far I feel good about the group we have. So.
No, thank you. We're a little bit over, so we'll try and keep these on time as best we can.
We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.